It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Researchers say that every 14 days, a language dies. Well, Ladino is one of those dying languages. Ladino is mostly spoken by older Sephardic Jews. There are about 4,000 Sephardic Jews in Seattle. It's the third largest population in the U.S. But their numbers are dwindling. Devin Narr is an assistant professor of history and Jewish studies in the Jackson School of International Studies at the University of Washington. And he is one of the few people in Seattle who can read Ladino. Devin came by our studios earlier and talked about what he's going to do to keep Ladino from going extinct. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Ross. It's a pleasure.
I have so many questions.
Okay,
all right. First of all, why is the language called Ladino?
That's a great question. There are actually a number of terms that people use to describe the language. The one that is most common in America these days is Ladino, which basically has to do with its Latin-based origin, coming from Spanish in juxtaposition to Hebrew, which was the holy sacred tongue. So Jews, after having been expelled from Spain in 1492, continued to speak a Spanish-based language, even though many of them traversed the Mediterranean and settled in what was then the Ottoman Empire.
It was so interesting to hear that there are so many people in Seattle who speak Ladino. How did they get here?
There are some sort of folk stories that sort of give us some insight into that. One is that a number of the pioneers among the Sephardic Jews who came in the first few years of the 20th century had some Greek friends who had been to the United States, had gone to the ends of the earth, as they described it, to the Pacific Northwest. And they realized that perhaps they must have gone in the summertime to make this comment, but they made the observation that what you can find in Seattle and the Puget Sound will remind you very much of the Mediterranean in terms of the kinds of industries available in fishing and other things like that. And sure enough, some of the first Sephardic Jews who came from the dissolving Ottoman Empire were among the first fish vendors at Pike Place Market.
And was the Ladino language strong amongst that group when they arrived in Seattle?
Yeah, when they arrived in Seattle, that was their mother tongue. That was a language in which their entire universe existed. In other words, not only a language of home, a language of synagogue, but also a language of the streets.
And now Ladino is a dying language, I guess, here and elsewhere. Why is that?
Well, there are a number of reasons to explain that. I would highlight maybe three. The first is pressures to speak English were really, really, really strong, just like for many immigrant groups. And so the children of the first generation of Ladino speakers spoke the language less, did not learn it in school in a formal kind of way. The second reason, I would say, has to do actually with the Holocaust. One of the largest communities of Ladino-speaking Jews was in Greece, and Greece was occupied by the Nazis, and almost all of the Jews of Greece, as well as some of the other Balkan countries, were exterminated during the war. And the third reason has to do with the ways in which Ladino speakers thought about the language itself. At the beginning of the 20th century, with the rise of nationalisms, people were very concerned about the purity of their language. And so some people thought that Ladino was not a legitimate language, but rather it was like a bastard tongue, a bastard jargon. And so some people advocated that it should just be abandoned in favor of either pure Spanish, as they called it, or the language of the countries in which they live.
I'm talking to Devin Narr. He's an assistant professor of Jewish studies at the University of Washington. He's fighting to keep Ladino from going extinct. If you just tuned in, yes, it's L-A-D-I-N-O, not Latino. It's a language of the Sephardic Jews, and there are actually about 4,000 of them here in Seattle, and many of them still speak Ladino, but not many of them can read or write Ladino anymore. Now I have to hear some.
Okay.
How would you say, boy, you speak Ladino terribly?
Hablas Ladino malorosamente sin perfección.
Habla perfección mala, very reminiscent of Spanish. Yeah. You may be the only person in Seattle who can read and write Ladino, is that right?
Well, I'm one of the few who can read and write it in the traditional Hebrew script.
And I understand some people have come to you with letters written in Ladino that they can't read.
That's correct. And so when people found out that I could read this language, they brought to me, you know, a gentleman brought to me his grandfather's last will and testament from the 1940s.
Wow.
Somebody brought to me a series of letters describing the family's experience during the Second World War, postcards describing the situation on the island of Rhodes or in towns in Turkey at the beginning of the 20th century, all of which they had preserved. They had the wherewithal to know that these were really important documents and testaments to their history and culture, and were provided with the opportunity to really explore and uncover their meanings.
Well, that must have been quite a moment to read back to someone his father's Last Will and Testament, or an account of World War II, which I doubt was pleasant to people who maybe didn't know the whole story. What was that like?
Well, it was a really powerful experience for me to be somehow able, in a sense, to mediate these two worlds, this world of Ladino that has been fading away for a number of generations, and to bring it back, to bring those voices back to life for those people for whom it's most meaningful. It was really powerful, I think, for people in Seattle, and it was also powerful for members of my family. When I began this process, I started with a set of family documents that all I could tell were the dates in which they were written: 1936, 1937, 1938, then nothing, 1945, 1946. And I figured if I could decipher those letters, I would be able to determine some of the details about what happened to the part of my family that remained in Greece and, as far as we knew, disappeared. But the details of that experience had not been transmitted to me.
Wow. Were you able to find anything in those letters from after the war that Absolutely. Revealed things about the wartime experience that maybe your father didn't even know?
Yes. Many of the members of my family were unaware of the particular events surrounding the deportation of my great uncle and his wife and two children from Salonika, Greece, to Auschwitz, where they perished. And these letters revealed what their experience was like during the occupation, on which train they were sent, what they were doing at the time of the war. And it was really a very powerful experience for me. And because I'd spent so much time decoding these letters, the Hebrew script in which these letters are written is a very particular one that's particular to Sephardic Jews. So if you learn modern Hebrew today, you don't learn this particular handwriting style or font of Hebrew. And so I had to find out what this script was by looking at some old books of Hebrew calligraphy. And I found a chart that said this squiggly mark is this letter and this squiggly mark
Wow.
is that letter. And that's really how I began.
Is there a particular passage from your family history that stays with you?
Well, there are a number of them. I think in terms of the wartime experience, I would say one of the most powerful ones has to do with a description of what takes place once my great uncle and his daughter, my cousin, arrive in Auschwitz. The wife and the son are immediately sent to the gas chambers and they perish. But the letters go on to describe how, in the context of the camps, there were separate barracks for men and women, that they were able to somehow arrange a secret meeting for the father and daughter to have a final exchange and a final embrace. And shortly after that, they were each sent to the gas chambers.
Wow. Who wrote it?
This was written by a family friend who was a coworker of my great uncle. And he had gone down to Athens and survived in hiding. And after the war, he wrote these letters to my great grandfather.
Let me ask you a question about Ladino. Sometimes there are things you can say in languages that you can't say in English. You can't say in a lot of other languages.
Se alavantaron los pepinos y ajarvaron a los bakshavanes. This literally means the cucumbers rose up and beat the farmers. Now, what's really interesting also about this expression is the term that is used for farmers is Turkish, and the term that is used for beating is from Hebrew. So, again, this is a great example of how the language is sort of a sponge of all of these other different cultural elements. So what could this possibly
be? So it's not
mean?
A treatment for a sci-fi movie, I'm sure. So what does it really mean when they say the cucumbers rose up and beat the farmers?
Right. This is an expression you would use if, like, a child pretends as if he knows better than the parents, or a student knows better than the teachers. They are like the cucumbers who have gone out of their realm as if they could go and, beat the farmers that are raising them.
Devin Narr, tell me about your efforts to kind of keep Ladino present. What are you doing and how's it working?
Well, here at the University of Washington and in partnership with members of the local Sephardic community, we have just inaugurated a new Sephardic studies program. We are trying to collect and centralize all of the legacy of the Ladino speakers here in Seattle, including especially printed books, documents, photographs, some material objects, some art, and any other kinds of remnants of this universe. And it's really been amazing to discover the kinds of things that have been hidden in people's basements and closets and desk drawers here in Seattle for generations. Books that go back to the 1600s until the 20th century, wedding contracts, family correspondence. And we have now more books in Ladino, more titles in Ladino than either the Library of Congress or Harvard University, which
right here in Seattle.
Right here in Seattle. And I think that's a pretty great accomplishment
it is.
So far.
And how about getting people interested in maybe taking a Ladino class or taking a reading and writing class from you? Is that any of that happening?
Yes. So we were very fortunate that this past year we had a professor from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem who's one of the world experts on Ladino. And he came here to Seattle and he taught undergrads how to read and write Ladino in the traditional Hebrew scripts. And now we have we had about 35 students. And I think for them, for the students, it, you know, most of them are not of Sephardic background. One student told me, objectively, Ladino is interesting. It's a Spanish-based language written in Hebrew letters that traversed the Mediterranean, grew up for 500 years in the context of an Islamic society, and then still made its way to Seattle. And that was something that these students found very intriguing.
Devin, thank you so much for telling us this story. How do I say thank you?
You could say merci mucho, which comes from French. Or you could say
merci mucho.
Yeah.
Devin Narr, merci mucho.
Un placer.
Devin is an assistant professor of history and Jewish studies at the Jackson School of International Studies at the University of Washington, one of the few people in Seattle who can read Ladino. By the way, we might be able to do our own version of trying to encourage Ladino. Mucho merci. Work that into your conversation for the rest of the day, and we can do our bit.